Senate Finance will begin. Senator Bundy, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilkin, and myself, Senator Green, are here today to hear a number of bills. For your information, we'll be meeting until about 10. Then we'll have a break, and we'll come back as soon as that meeting is over. And fourth session is being delayed till late afternoon. And for the information of all sitting in the room, House Bill 13 will be held to this afternoon. House Bill 246 will also be held to this afternoon while some other planning is getting done. And House Bill 334 will be held to this afternoon in case anyone is. 426 will be held to this afternoon. I'm sorry. 246, 426, you know, a little dyslexic moment, but. And House Bill 334 will be held to this afternoon to get some final language changes and amendments ready. Welcome, Senator Olson. And the first one we have up is House Bill 105, Medicaid for Adult Dental Services. And we discussed this at our previous meeting, and Senator Wilkin raised some questions, and he's been working, his office has been working with the sponsor in the department, and they've come up with some language that is going to work for everyone. Senator Wilkin, do you wish to move the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could move amendment number one and object for explanation.
Go right ahead.
So the concern about this bill for a couple of years now has been the cost. And while we put a cap of 1,050, we don't know how many 1,050s are out there. So I just didn't want this, and I don't think the committee wants this, to turn into another PCA or another Nally Kid Care where it just grows topsy-turvy and we can't really shut off the valve. So I work with the department, and I wonder if Janet could come help us, or whoever's here from the department. And I asked him for a couple of things. I just didn't want budget creep, as this is a three-year program. I didn't want them to come back next year with a supplemental. I thought we could just turn the valve off on money once the money ran out, the service stopped, but we have some constitutional problems with that. So in order to avoid this supplemental, you have in your letter, in your packet, a letter dated May 4th, which from the commissioner, which I'd ask ask Janet to please review and for the committee to review. And then the amendment itself that talks about how they would throttle this back as the money started to dwindle. Also, and I'm not sure, well, we'll come back to that later. So with that, Madam Chair, if you could ask Janet to help us. And
okay, Janet, could you join this discussion and explain it for us, please?
Madam Chairman, for the record, Janet Clark with the Department of Health and Social Services. And with me is
Stacy Crayley from the Department of Law.
Madam Chairman, when we met with Senator Wilkin and his staff, there were several things that he asked us to look at. First was trying to look at some language that would even put a tighter restraint on spending in the statute related to adult dental. And that is what amendment number one is. And Stacy Crayley from Department of Law is really the expert on that. And she can talk about that in a minute. The second item was the senator asked for a letter from Commissioner Jackson related to our intention and plan on living within the appropriated amount for the preventive adult dental services. And we provided that letter to the committee and for all members. The third thing that we discussed is the preference of Senator Wilkin to have the adult dental prevention program in a separate appropriation. So we've redrafted a new fiscal note basically outlining that would go into a separate appropriation so that the legislature can track the money fairly easily. Because, as you know, we cannot transfer into or out of a separate appropriation. And then the fourth thing we provided late yesterday afternoon was just some information on how many current dentists are enrolled in the Medicaid program. And we provided another letter to Senator Wilkin. So those were the four things that we agreed to follow up and provide information. And I think we've done that. So with that opening, Madam Chairman, I think I'd like to turn it over to Stacy Crayley, who will really discuss Amendment Number 1, and that is the statutory language that we prepared.
Stacy.
Thank you. Again, Stacy Crayley from the Department of Law. And what this amendment does is it creates a yearly adjustment for the bill, as you know, has a three-year cycle provision. And what this bill will do at the end of each fiscal year, before the beginning of the next fiscal year, is the department will have to make a determination of how many individuals have applied in the previous year for purposes of the adult dental program. And depending upon whether or not we've met or exceeded our specific appropriation, the department will then, by regulation, if necessary, reduce the cap, which is already set forth in statute, but we'll be able to reduce that number by a pro rata reduction so that we maintain the appropriation. And so this will each year of this three-year bill or this three-year program, we'll have to do an analysis of how many people applied, how much money we've spent, and if we are exceeding our yearly appropriation for that purpose, the next year through regulation we will do a pro rata reduction, so everybody will still receive an adult dental service, not the emergency service, but this preventative care service that this bill is designed to provide. And so the amount of the benefit or the cap may not be the $1,100, it may be $850 depending upon utilization review. Mm-hmm. And so it'll just be a yearly review to make sure we're staying within that number, but not to completely cut off the program or the service for preventative care, but to allow everybody to have some preventative care. It just may not be as large of a benefit.
Are there any questions of the department? I want to know, is there anything inconsistent with what you and Senator Wilkins' office and all have prepared with the letter of intent? Is there from the House? Is it consistent with that letter of intent, and that's still germane to what we're doing?
Madam Chairman, yes.
Okay.
Letter of intent is still germane.
I just want to be sure before we move that there was no conflict there. Senator Wilkin, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection and thank the department for their help.
Thank you. Is there further objection? Okay, Senator Wilkin, further comment?
If I could, Janet, I spoke with the dental board the other day, and we talked about this, and the effect of this is we're going to make available, I forget the number, it's in here somewhere, but a lot of people that are going to now have this service. And their response to me was, well, that's nice, but there aren't enough dentists that do Medicaid to absorb this coming into the market. So that got into another subject, and it's not a subject that we're going to solve today, but I'd put on the record. And they said about half, and your letter says about two-thirds. But apparently there's some structural problems, and some dentists don't do Medicaid, accept Medicaid, because the rates are too low. That's their words. The other is that there are just problems with people making appointments and not showing up, far in excess of what the other population is. And there's some liability issues. And so their suggestion to me was to encourage the department to work with them, and I don't have any idea what this means, but work with them to change the rules, whatever that might be, so that more dentists are available to serve this clientele. And their words were, we would like to work with the department to entice this clientele to come to us, but we can't do it under the current rules. So that's not an issue for today. But I think it's an issue that will show itself over the next 3 years as we develop this, because I think we all want to do this, but we've just been so concerned of the cost and we've been burned before in the last few years. We don't want this to happen again. So with that, Madam Chair, we'll be able to track it with the new line item. We have a commitment that we won't have supplementals, and we have a three-year review. So with that, I'm happy with the bill, and I appreciate everybody's work to do this. It'll be a great program if we can just contain it.
Yeah, and I thank you for your work on it. That's good work. You want to give us a motion to pass this out?
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 105 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Your objection? There being no objection, House Bill 105 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. and attached letter of intent. Would you move the letter of intent?
Madam Chair, I would move and ask unanimous consent that that we also move the letter of intent dated May 4, 2006 to yourself and myself, signed by the commissioner.
Okay. Thank you. There being no objection, the letter of intent will be attached to that note, that bill. Okay. Representative Cockhills, HB 16.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, thanks for taking up House Bill 16. I think you had a pretty good discussion on it last time, and I'm sorry I wasn't here. I understand my staff did a pretty good job. So it's an avenue of success. It's been something that I have been impressed by the youngsters that have been taught in these boarding schools. There's been a lot of work done on it that that this committee has been helpful on, the regulations. I'm grateful to the department for that. The schools have been scrutinized probably economically, which is appropriate. So it's an avenue of success that I'd like to have your consideration. And so I'll just make myself available for questions.
Are there any questions? We've had this before us a couple of times. And then I know there's been work between the other meetings and have kind of added to and adjusted some things that I think should bring make everyone comfortable. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to put on the record that on line 9, under the regulations that everyone has worked so hard on to make this an acceptable bill, they're out for discussion and adoption now. If they come back materially altered from what we have all agreed to, we'll have this subject back before us next January.
Okay.
So I don't want the state board and the system changing those regulations materially unless we're involved in that. And Representative Coghill and I have talked about that, and I don't anticipate any problem whatsoever, but I just want it on the record.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. Are there any other questions on House Bill 16?
I'm sorry, one other.
Senator Olson?
I'd just like to make a comment on the bill being a product both of the boarding school program and back in the BIA days when I was in grade school, I was also sent out to finish the third grade, and that it certainly was a positive factor as far as me being able to go on to college and on to graduate school, both in medical and law school and other vocational school endeavors that I've done. So I speak strongly for those students, especially that are attracted by this program, where you've got to have some buy-in, where you've got to go ahead and show some initiative, because you are being separated. And it wasn't easy being separated from my parents for long periods of time. And the only one that took it worse than myself was my younger brother. So I believe in this program. I believe in this bill as well.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And do we still have a new fiscal note coming?
No, this has not been revised. Yes, we do.
And it would be a fiscal note that would just delete Lower Kuskokwim. So it's very straightforward, just a matter of detail.
Because that's no longer, and it adjusts the amount to, I think, $1,079,000. Instead of 1.255, it will look hard. We do have, but I don't think, is that just new? That hadn't been distributed, correct? Thank you very much. So we'll need to, further clarifies that the Lower Kuskokwim is not included in those calculations. Is there any further comment or questions? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 16 from committee with individual recommendations and attached and pending fiscal note.
Is there objection? House Bill 16 moves from committee with individual recommendations and revised fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
At ease, please.
Yeah,
House Bill 381. Here they come. They're just right there. Thank you, here they are. And then we also have Dan Falsky online. Brian, Joe, welcome. If you would help us walk through this.
Sure, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Governmental Relations and Public Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. With me is Joe Dubler, our Chief Financial Officer, and I think you mentioned, Madam Chair, that our CEO, Dan Falsky, should be on telephonically.
Dan Falsky.
Madam Chair, I'm here.
Thank you. Do you have any comment you want to give to us now?
Actually, I do not. I'd like to let Brian and Joe have a chance to explain it and then see where the discussion goes.
Okay, thank you. Brian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that the bill's been up in front of the committee before, the Senate version of it, so there has been some discussion about it. So we will focus on changes that have been done in the House. In trying to come up with a number that seemed attainable yet conservative, we came up with a number of $140 million while working with the House Finance Committee. We spoke with our financial advisor in New York this morning, and we're trying to revise it a little bit. There was a slight uptick in the tobacco market. It's very volatile, so it makes it extremely difficult to try to figure out, to try to actually land on a number. Preliminarily, we would say $145 million right now would be a solid conservative number, but we are still trying to work that through, and in the next day we should have something a little bit more concrete. I know that previously there had been bankers testifying and who had heard larger numbers, but as an example, if you were to try to squeeze the last $14 million you could out of this, it would cost over the cost of the bonds between $200 and $300 million to pay that $14 million back. So as you can see, there's truly diminishing returns where it's not maximizing every dollar because it gets ridiculous at that point.
Okay. Other questions? Dan, anything you wish to add?
Madam Chair, I just reiterate what Brian has said, that we have a piece of this where, as Brian had mentioned, the $14 million on the unrated side, you also have a section of below investment grade, and we estimate at around $21 to $22 million that we're trying to get a feel for. So Brian has done a wonderful job on this, and I'll hold my comments to there, Madam Chair.
Okay. Just kind of review for us what actually happens when this process takes place. One of you could. Joe?
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Joe Dubler, the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. What this bill will allow the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation to do is to restructure the existing two transactions we've got. We sold one in 2000 and one in 2001. And the tobacco market at that time was a little young. We were one of the first states, I think we were the first state to start on it. We were the second state to actually finish the transaction. There'd only been three or four transactions completed when we did the first one. It has matured a little bit. They've come up with different structures that have allowed them to get additional proceeds out of the same amount of revenues. What this bill will allow us to do is to pay off the existing bonds and use the new structures to get more out of the same revenue stream. In addition, push the maturity of the bonds out further than the initial two transactions were. And if you recall, when we did the first two transactions, we kept the maturity short. We shot for a dollar amount. I believe the first one, the net proceeds was $93 million, and we were able to keep the maturities rather short. It's our understanding that the governor and the legislature has decided to maximize the amount of proceeds that they get from the transaction in this time, and that's why we've come up with a little more aggressive bond structure. This bill will allow us to do that, and basically that's what it does. And it frees up the surpluses that are available after the bonds have been defeased. The bonds that are currently outstanding have been defeased. Those surpluses are what are going to pay for the capital projects in this bill.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Okay, I appreciate your information, and we'll be keeping in touch to find out where we really are, and we'll bring this back tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dan. Okay, HB 484. Representative Wilson, 484. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Peggy Wilson from District 2, Wrangell. And we've been over the bill before, but you requested some changes. And we did make a change. And every...
You know, I just thought we need to adopt the CS, the Y version. Senator Wilkin?
Madam Chair, move and ask unanimous consent that this committee adopt Senate committee substitute for House Bill 484 version Y as in Yankee dated 5-4 for our working document.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
And we did make the change. Everyone has agreed to the change. And the change at the end says an appropriation under this subsection must be made within 30 years after the date the money was expended or debt incurred. And that will just keep it to that generation, basically.
Right. And I appreciate that. I know it's a very difficult issue in that there are all sorts of insurances that need to be in place in order for this program to continue and to prohibit litigation. I would say it's not the easiest thing in the world to understand, but I appreciate the work you've done and the other folks who have the Fisheries Entry Commission as part of their work. And so I'm pleased with this. Is there Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've got some discomfort with the 30 years. I'd like to make an amendment to version Y that would take that down to 15, 30 years. Anybody want to object?
Okay, well, you want to go ahead? You want to move for the amendment to this?
Amendment.
Do we have to adopt the CS? We can amend it? Yeah, we'll have to remove the objection to the CS. Senator Wilkin, is your objection maintained?
No, I remove my objection to adopting version Y.
Okay, is there a continued objection? Okay, Senator Stedman.
So I had a conversation with the folks on this bill. When we're trying to deal with a time frame, and I don't feel a time frame of 30 years is applicable, in that the earlier version of the bill had no time frame on it, which clearly gave the legislature more latitude in their discretion as far as what would be a reasonable reimbursement. When we put in a time frame as long as 30 years, my reading of the bill ties into the discretion of the legislature, the ability to appropriate that money back to the association, the Fisheries Association. Well, in 30 years, a lot of people come and go in and out of the industry, and times change. And you don't buy back permits because you've got nothing better to do with your money. You buy them back because of a potential economic gain you're going to receive by a reduced amount of permits. When the economic cycle and fisheries swing to the upside, there'll be less permits available, and you will hopefully receive more than it cost you to reduce the permits. By bringing it back to 15 years from 30, and it gives the time window that's more applicable when we try to gauge the potential economic gains that the industry is going to have versus the expenditures.
Well, Senator Stedman, I had trouble with that as well, but the 30 years was chosen because the length of the federal loan and therefore the time that it's effective is 30 years, and that's why we chose the 30 years, because the association, when they have collected the funds together to buy back a permit, don't have any control over when they're told to make another permit available. You know more about this than I do, I'm sure. But anyway, we just wanted the 30 years to be consistent with the loan, the term of the loan.
No.
And so go ahead.
Oh, I understand that. The maximum length is 30 years. They may or may not use debt, and they may pick some other time frame depending on the finances of the association. So they don't, you know, you're not necessarily going to run it out 30 years. I think it's just an unwilling amount of time to deal with. And conversations I had with the representative from the United Fishermen's that 10 to 15 years would work for them. I don't fault him for wanting 30, but I just don't think it's in the best interest of the state.
Thank you very much. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Having been a commercial fisherman in the past, certainly times come and times go. If prices are high and prices are low, and then they go even lower. I think that I like the bill as it is, because 30 years gives at least the person, from my standpoint, when I was rocking around out there in the boat, not under such a time pressure to try and resolve things. So I tend to like the 30 years that's there.
Is there other comment? Have you officially moved the amendment to change it to 15 years?
It's a handsome amendment, Madam
it
Chair.
It is a handsome amendment. An objection is obtained, is maintained. Yes, Representative Wilson.
May I speak?
Yes.
The concern I have is that the fishermen, because they don't have the money and because they're thinking of taking a loan out, it's very discerning to them not to have some kind of, because they're taking a risk, because they don't know in the long term what happens to prices. And the fact that they have to take the loan out, they would like this to be at least as long as the loan, for the very simple reason there's no guarantees for them, and this will actually help them get the loan. So, because there's some kind of guarantee here. So if there's, you know, if I really would feel more comfortable without that amendment.
Thank you. Frank Holman, did you want to offer any information to us? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if we could hear from Frank.
Welcome.
Madam Chairman, thank you, Senator. I would just echo.
You would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Excuse me, Frank Holman with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. I guess I would just echo what Representative Wilson said, that the fishermen, in order to establish a private salmon fishery association to buy back these permits, we'll have to, in this case before us, we'll have to establish a 30-year loan, and this protects them in that 30-year period from the state coming around at some point and selling permits back into the fishery. In order to form these associations and incur this debt, they have to accomplish a 66 2/3% vote among the fishermen. And that's very hard to do. And this just gives them a little more assurance that nothing's going to happen during the term of the loan to those fishermen, so it can help facilitate this fleet reduction by giving them this guarantee.
Does not the money, though, exchange, it goes to the association?
Madam Chairman, the money would go, well, initially the money on the loan would go to the association. To the extent in the future that they had debt outstanding, then any future sales, if they occurred within the 30-year period, would go to help reduce the debt.
Okay. Are there any other questions about the amendment? Okay, the amendment has been moved. There is objection. Mindy, could I get you to call the roll, please?
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Bundy? Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Wilkins?
No.
Senator Green?
No.
One yay, five nays.
So the amendment has failed. Okay. Is there any further discussion on House Bill 484? Thank you for your help.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilken, would you like to move House Bill 484 from committee?
I was just commenting that his handsome amendment just got a great big bruise.
I have to be older.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 484 from committee unamended with attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? There being no objection, House Bill 484 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Thank you very much. Okay, what is next? House Bill 334 is being held for this afternoon. HB 399. Representative Chenault's office. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
And by the way, Ed Sniffen is online for questions. Okay, go ahead, please.
My name is Sue Wright, and I work for Representative Mike Chenault. And unfortunately, today we are here with an event-driven piece of legislation. The McDowell family in Sterling, and I believe her son is a constituent of yours, Senator Green. His elderly parents have been egregiously taken advantage of by a distant cousin to the extent that when our office became involved, because the property and the couple are Mike's constituents, their home was gutted, their property has been taken away from them, documents have been signed during the time they were medicated in the hospital, and this gentleman from Colorado came up here and took advantage of this elderly couple to the tune of between $750 and $2 million worth of real property and bank accounts.
How much?
$750,000 to $2 million worth of property has been transferred with quick claim deeds, powers of attorney, documents that I've never even seen before. Unfortunately, when we went looking for a state agency to help these folks, no one but OPA came forward and was able to help. I'm glad to report this week that we have stopped some of the eviction processes and gotten OPA involved, a guardian appointed, and this gentleman in Colorado, I hope to see him in jail. That's how egregious this situation is. He went so far as to gut their home, the only home that they had. There are studs in the walls, all the plumbing's been removed, all the insulation's been removed. He said he was remodeling it. And last winter, they had to actually move into homes. They're now living in senior centers. And these are people who should have, by all rights, enjoyed their retirement, like you and I perhaps may. This piece of legislation will allow OPA to go forward, investigate, and refer for prosecution cases such as this. I have seen only one other case in the time from last June to now, to the present time, that has been prosecuted. And that's been prosecuted through the United States Attorney's Office, not by the state of Alaska, although people will come forward and tell you that there have been complaints filed. I have yet to see one investigated and brought to prosecution or investigated to the point where there's been any funds recovered. It's a growing problem nationwide. In the state of Florida, it's the third worst fraud against the elderly. And the state of Florida, the state of Wyoming, the state of Indiana are now looking at the same type of legislation. In fact, I think Florida's passed theirs. Mm-hmm. It's something that we need to do with a growing senior population. I know if I'm 55 or 60 years old and I'm incapacitated taking pain medication, I certainly don't want somebody to walk into my hospital room and sign a quick claim deed for my property. And that's exactly what this man did. And he did it under the auspices of being a relative, I'll take care of you, trust me, and this couple did. And we've got a mess to clean up.
And this is to a man that's actually a very famous man.
Yes, it is.
In Alaska, whose name will go down in history, Sam McDowell. I do have Dan McDowell online. Do you have further testimony to give? this morning?
No, ma'am. I'm finished.
Are there questions for the sponsor staff? No. Dan McDowell, please join us. Dan McDowell?
Yes, I'm here.
Could you please join us, introduce yourself, and give your association, and then begin your testimony, please?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity, Senators. I know you've had a long battle this session, and I really appreciate your service. My name is Dan McDowell, and I'm a lifetime Alaskan, and my father came to Alaska shortly after World War II. He had several successful businesses, and my mother was a housewife, and she raised the five of us kids. Sue Wright said, first off, we had tried and tried and tried to get attention to this senior fraud that's happened to my parents. We went to several state and federal agencies with no luck until Mike Chenault came forward, and without his help, we would be sunk. Now that OPA's taken this, Josh Fink, everybody has done such a wonderful job. We've stopped this predator who came into our family a few years ago and had my mother sign over all of our properties and the home my father built in Anchorage back in the 50s for $200,000 in cash. He took that. Also, a piece of riverfront property. My dad's first love was taking care of the Kenai, and he has 1,250 feet in Sterling. And this man had my mother sign over a quit claim deed to take that property and property in Sildovia and Gulcana and Talkeena, and he's completely wiped us out. Mom broke her hip from all the stress she slipped, and she's in a senior center now in Sterling, and my father's living on Funny River Road in an assisted living, absolutely penniless. He took every dime and tied up every dime so they couldn't even defend themselves. This summer I'm trying to get set up to help the National Veterans Wheelchair Games, and this man knew I was going to have some of these disabled veterans down to the Kenai River Classic and fish the Kenai this summer, and he stole our property and evicted us from our own homestead. And we got that stopped, but the property is still in his name. I also would like to mention that we've been doing some investigative work on our own, and we believe that this fella has been using more than one Social Security number, and we've got documented proof to that effect also. So this is something that I really would ask each one of you to look into your heart. We're all getting older. To go through life and to save for your golden years and to have somebody come in and wipe you completely out of every dime that you ever worked for is just, I just can't imagine. Been really tough on my dad. He used to be a strong person, and he defended a lot of the issues on the Kenai, and he bought a lot of properties along the Kenai to return to the public. Isaac Walton Wayside, the Anchor River, New State Campground, there's Jim's Landing in around Russian River. He did a lot for the state, and in return, he just wanted the public to have access. And I just ask for your support. We really need your help. The bill will help all of us as we get older, and we just need the protections there so these predators coming up from Colorado and other parts of the country can't take advantage of these seniors who've spent their entire lifetime working and raising their families in Alaska. And I just really appreciate your consideration on this bill and ask please to support House Bill 399. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan. It's good to hear from you. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I was wondering, Madam Chair, if Josh Fink's online.
I do not have Josh Fink online.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I had heard some representation that the fiscal note may not be enough for the services that will be needed to be provided in setting up this office.
You have the fiscal note from Representative Chenault. The $189,000?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
Well, the maker has, determined that I'm sure. Sue, you want to talk about that?
Yes, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Senator Dyson, what there was some concern about a new program being started, and since we can't get a grasp on how many cases we're going to have, what we've done is given Josh the bare bones minimum to get started, and we expect that if he's inundated, there will be further funding available. And we've worked hard with him. In addition, he is probably the only division in through House Finance that I've worked with over the past 4 years that has actually tightened the reins and made his division more efficient by asking for timesheets from contract attorneys. He's actually gone in and made everything streamlined, everything that he can, and we're going to be working with him this summer to make it even more so. So my compliments to him. This is the barest minimum that we can go, and actually he probably could use more money. It's completely up to
Thank you, Sue. Thanks. Are there any other questions? Sue Dyson.
I just said, sounds like supplemental.
Oh, we don't use that word anymore.
And I, too, appreciate what Josh has done. And I suspect all of us know horror stories. I know a couple or three, and they were where there's elderly gentleman who needs almost attendant nurse care, and lo and behold, he falls in love with a nurse, even though he's semi-comatose, and marries a nurse or a personal care attendant that's 28 years old, who happens to be the consort of the attending physician, and with the marriage that nobody witnessed, goes all the property rights, and then the person up and dies under with amazing timing circumstances, and the entire estate goes to the new love that the gentleman may not even have been conscious of seeing. Anyways, what we're doing here is, I think, very timely.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why is there only funding for 1 year in the fiscal note? Is it anticipated just a one-year program, or how is it to continue?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, what we did was try to make this most efficient and find out how many cases are actually out there. We've had reports that there were as many as 500 cases investigated or reported to other agencies, but none of them have been prosecuted. So until we get our feet wet and find out how serious this problem is, we stuck to the minimum, and we're conservative in our estimate for what it was going to cost.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Wilkin. Senator Bundy.
I'm just wondering if they would entertain a new title called the Pamela Anderson bill.
Oh. Thank you.
Madam
Chair, thank you very much.
Welcome back. Madam Chair, moved to report House Bill 399 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
There being no objection, House Bill 399 is moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
And could I take just a moment on behalf of the McDowell family to thank each and every one of you? You're doing something that's incredibly wonderful.
Thank you.
And take joy in it.
Thank you.
You've done Thanks. Something
thank
good.
You. Thank you, Sue. Okay, House Bill 377.
Gary, I wouldn't be a short title. It would have to be a tall title.
That's true. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'll be brief in my comments on HB 377. Letters from interested parties should have been included in your packets. The point of House Bill 377 is to clean up a discrepancy between state law and the building codes that have been adopted by municipalities. State law requires that an architect or engineer consult on the design of a home if it's more than four families or more than two stories high. But the building codes adopted by a municipality often deal with two families and up to three stories high. And as land becomes less available, people are building taller houses, The building codes provide a check and balance on the safety of the design and a consultative design. House Bill 377 makes state law match building codes in municipalities. It only applies if there is a building code in the municipality. It doesn't apply outside, and that's to deal with what the architects, engineers, and land surveyors spoke of in previous meetings, concerns about safety. The point really being, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that every added step in the process adds cost. And there aren't that many engineers or architects that are interested in doing this type of work in the state, but there's a large community of professionals that are able to do the work, particularly when there's a building code oversight. That's essentially the bill, Madam Chair. It will lead to a little bit of savings on the design and construction of a home, which with home prices rising, every little bit we can do is good.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Bundy.
Yeah, just for the record, however, where there's a municipal building code, then the building code applies. Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't supersede that. Any other questions? And there is no fiscal note. Yes. Okay. Anything else? Any further information needed on House Bill 377? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 377 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
House Bill 377 moves from committee with the individual recommendation and attached zero fiscal notes.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Thank you
very much. Okay, we will recess until after the conference committee this afternoon. Is it still scheduled for 4 p.m.?
4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. 4 o'clock. And then we will have back before us. Yes?
Yeah, and I'm a little fuzzy about the changing schedule this afternoon, but we do have a brief but important S meeting. Sometime we'll squeeze in there.
We'll have back before us House Bill 13, House Bill 426, and House Bill 334 this afternoon at probably about 4:30 after the call of the chair. Any questions? We are recessed until later this afternoon.
Afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Conference Committee on the Operating Budget. Present today, Representative Meyer, Representative Chenault, Representative Jewell, Senator Hoffman, Senator Green, and myself, Senator Wilkin, joined at the table by David Thiel from Ledge Finance. Welcome, everyone. You have on your tables, just to improve your disposition, a chocolate chip cookie, compliments of Rick Urien. Yeah. And I just thought you might as well get fat right along with my office. So that's why we're spreading that around. Let's see, today we're going to do, in this order, corrections, fish and game, health and social services, and courts. Motion sheets are available in the back of the room. And anything to come before the committee before we begin? Representative Chenault will make motions for the agencies. And Representative Chenault, if we could start with corrections, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make Department of Corrections. Item number one, I would make the motion that we accept the Senate number.
Senate.
Under item number two, we would accept the Senate number.
Senate.
Item number three, we would take House.
House.
Item number four, we would take Senate minus 282.8.
Senate minus 282.8.
Number five, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number six, we would take House.
House.
Number seven, we would take House.
House.
Number eight, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number nine, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number 10, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number 11, we would take House.
House. Page 2.
Page 2. Number 12, we would take House.
House.
Number 13, we would take Senate minus 300,000.
Senate minus 300.
Number 14, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Both places.
Items, okay.
Number 15, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number 16, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number 17, we would take House.
House.
Number 18, we would take House.
House.
Number 19, we would take Senate.
Senate. Page 3.
Number 20, we would take Senate.
Senate.
We would like to hold 21 open.
Open.
And on 22, we would take Senate.
Senate, okay. Is there discussion on the recommendations as presented?
We would like to vote the number 4,
okay,
and number 13.
Okay. Who can help us with item number 4?
Is anyone here? Oh,
no. Oh, anyone here to help us with James? Where's James? Where's Portia here? Okay. Hi, Portia. Anything you can share with us on number 4? That was Senate minus $282,000.8.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Portia Parker for the record with Department of Corrections. This money, the 565.6 that was funded by the Senate, is to fund all of our residential substance abuse treatment programs, which we have three. These are two of the programs that are funded, two of them. We lost all the federal funding to support those RSAT programs, and this, if we lose 282.8, I believe we will have to close down one of our two remaining substance abuse treatment programs.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. We'll hold that open. We'll move to hold that open. Senator Green, another one? Did you have a question?
Item number 13.
13. Page 2. Senate minus 300,000. Any discussion on that? Someone share some thoughts on that? Portia, anything?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We believe we need the entire 800,000. This is for the Anchorage Correctional Complex, where we are grossly overcrowded. This is funding for increased staffing. We have 40 prisoners in a gym there, and it's fairly constant at this point. And we need these new posts and staffing just to supervise the increase in the offenders we have at that facility.
Is this the Anchorage Jail?
Yes.
It's overcrowded?
Yes, very much so. With the combined facility, the Anchorage Complex and the Cook and the pretrial, which are now the Anchorage Complex, both of them.
All right, we'll hold that open and come back and review that. All right, anything else? Other questions on the recommendations? Okay. So, Representative Chenault, what I show is held open is 4, 13, and 21. The rest as recommended. That's everyone clear on that? Okay. Representative Chenault, would you make a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I would make the motion that we accept those items as stated, leaving open 4, 13, and 21 for further consideration.
Okay. Is there objection? Okay, seeing none. Department of Corrections is set aside as presented. Let's go to Fish and Game. Representative Chenault, Fish and Game, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On Fish and Game, we would propose on number 1, we would propose House minus 200,000.
Okay, House minus 200,000.
On number 2, we would propose House on both numbers.
House on both.
Number 3, we would propose to leave open.
Open 3. Okay.
They're just a brief of these, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Stand at ease, please. Representative Schnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'd stopped at number 3, which we would like to hold open. We would also like to hold open number 4.
hold open for?
Number five, we would like the house numbers.
House on five.
Number six, we would like the house numbers.
House.
Number seven, we would like to hold open.
Open on seven.
We would also like to hold open number eight, please.
Number eight, these are all commercial fisheries items.
Right.
Okay, eight is open.
Okay. Number nine, we would like to hold open.
Open.
Number 10, we would hold open.
Open.
Number 11, we would take house.
House.
Number 12, we would like to hold open.
Open.
Number 13, we would take Senate.
Senate.
14, we would take House.
House.
15, we would take Senate.
Senate.
16, we would take Senate on all three numbers, Senate minus 197.5.
On item number two?
On item number 16.
Line item two on?
Right, yeah. Right. Line item number two would take Senate minus 197.5.
Okay.
Item 17, we would take House.
House.
Item 18, first item, Senate. Second item, Senate minus 56.4. The remaining four items, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number 19, we would take Senate minus 2.0.
Senate minus 2.0.
And we would also take Senate on the second item on 19.
Senate.
On 20, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On 21, we would take on the first item, Senate. On the second item, we would take Senate minus 26.1. And on the remaining four items of item line item 21, we would take Senate.
So all Senate and 26.1 minus on item number two.
Correct. On item 22, we would take House.
House.
Item 23, we would like to hold open.
Open.
On item 24, we would take House minus 125.
House minus 125.
On item 25, we would take Senate on item number one.
Senate on one.
And we would take House minus 78.3 on item number two.
House minus 78.3.
On item 26, we would take House on item number one minus 7,000.
House minus seven.
And on item on the second item, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item 27, we would take House minus 125 on the first number.
House minus 125.
And we would take House on the second number.
House.
On item 28, we would take House minus 0.9.
House minus 0.9.
On item 29, on the first item, we would take House minus 9.8.
House minus 9.8.
And on the second item, we would take House minus 34.9.
House minus 34.9.
On item 30, we would take Senate on all three numbers.
Senate on all three.
On item 31, we would take House minus 20.2.
House minus 20.2.
On item 32, excuse me, we would take House.
House on 32.
With that, Mr. Chairman.
Before we ask for motion, any comments, discussions on those? Okay, Representative Chenault, we have open 3478, 23, 3478, 9, 10, 12, 23. Okay. Representative
Chenault, motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd make the motion that we accept those items as proposed, leaving open 3, 4, 9, 10, 12, and 23.
Okay, objection? I see none. Fish and Game is adopted as recommended and set aside. Health and Social Services. Representative Schnell?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, let me get back to Health and Social Services now. There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Starting line item number one, first item, we would take House.
House.
Second item, we would take House.
House.
Third and fourth, all on line item number one.
Line item one, all House.
Okay.
Okay.
Line item number two, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number three, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number four, we would take House.
House.
Number five, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number six, both items, we would take House.
House.
Number seven, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Number eight, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate.
On number nine, we would take House.
House. H2.
On item number 10, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item number 11, we would take House, both items.
House, House.
On 12, we would take House, both items.
House, House.
On 13, we would take House.
House.
14, we would take Senate, all three items.
Senate on three.
On 15, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate on two.
On item 16, Mr. Chairman, we would take House on number one.
House.
And we would take House minus 220.4 on number two. Okay,
so House, House, and second one minus 220,000.4.
Item 17, we would take House.
House.
Item 18, both numbers, Senate.
Senate, Senate on both.
On 19, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate on both. Page three.
Page three, Mr. Chairman, on page 20, we would take Senate, both items.
Senate on both.
On 21, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate on both.
On 22, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On 23, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate on both.
Number 24, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate on both.
On 25, we would take Senate on both items.
Senate on both.
On 26, we would take Senate minus 250.
Senate minus 250.
On 27, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On 28, we would take House minus 200.
House minus 200.
On 29, we would take Senate, both numbers.
Senate on both. Okay. Page 4.
Page 4, item number 30, Mr. Chairman, we would take House.
House.
On item 31, we would take House.
House.
On item 32, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item 33, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item 34, we would take House.
House. Page 5.
On item 35, we would like to hold open.
Open.
On item 36, we would take House.
House.
On item 37, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item 38, we would take House on both items.
House on two.
39, we would take House.
House.
On 40, we would take House.
House.
On 41, we would take House.
House.
On 42, we would take Senate on both numbers.
Senate on two.
On 43, we would take House on both numbers.
House on both.
On 44, we would take House on both numbers.
House on both. Page 6.
On item 45, we would take House, both numbers.
House on both.
And on item 46, we would take house on all items, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all 11 items, Mr. Chairman?
House on all.
On 47, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On 48, we would take House.
House.
On 49, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On 50, we would take Senate.
Senate.
And on 51, Mr. Chairman, we would take Senate.
Okay. So Hess is complete with the exception of one open, which is on page number 35, Public Health. Okay. Committee, please stand at ease. Okay, discussion on Hess with one item open. Okay, Representative Chenault, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make the motion that we accept the recommendations as provided, holding open item number 35.
With Hess, is there objection to adopting as presented? Seeing none, Hess is set aside. Next is the court system. Is Mr. Christensen here? You want to join us? Okay. Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alaska court system, item number one. We would take House.
House.
On item number two, we would take House.
House.
Item three, we would take House.
House.
Item four, we would take House minus 40,000.
House minus 40.
Item five, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Item six, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Item seven, we would take House.
House.
Item eight, we would take House.
House.
On item nine, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item 10, we would take Senate.
Senate.
On item 11, we would take House.
House.
Item 12, we would take Senate.
Senate.
Item 13, we would take Senate.
Senate.
And item 14, we would take House.
Okay, House. And Senator Green, did you have a unallocated?
Yes, I did. Motion. I'm going to kind of go back and go through these again. And I just wanted on line number one, I'd like for it to be House minus 50.
House minus 50 on one. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And on line number two, House minus 50.
I said, you just want to take 50 out of every line item?
Each line item.
Okay.
On this entire budget.
Mr. Christensen, would you have any comment on that?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Chris Christensen, Deputy Director, Alaska Court System. Mr. Chairman, as you know, today is my 50th birthday, and I was... I assumed that the committee's action today would, in some way, set the tone for the second half of my life.
We'll come back and graduate your new assignment.
So you're concurring with those changes?
Oh, I will be happy to withdraw my name. Right, happy birthday.
Don't go anywhere. So, okay. Representative Chenault.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd like a motion, I would make the motion that we accept the numbers that we've agreed on. And I think that closes out the court system.
Any objection to adopting as presented and closing the court system? All right, there's court system is closed. Tomorrow we'll gather at 4 o'clock at the University of Alaska and work towards department-wide department open appropriations. And before he sneaks away, on the record, we ought to give a big round of applause for Chris. Welcome to the dark side. Happy 50. Yeah, that's right. Is there anything else?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Chris. Happy birthday to you.
Great. All right, anything else for this love fest? All right, we're adjourned. See you tomorrow.
We'll come back to order. It's good to see Senator Bundy, Dyson, Stedman, and Co-Chair Wilkin, myself, Senator Green, and we're going to go out of order a little bit as we look for a sponsor of another piece of legislation, House Bill 426, Medical Assistance and Insurance Corporation. And have we distributed the marked up copies yet, or are we?
Madam Chair, I believe Darwin is doing that right now.
Okay.
For the record, Reneva Moss, legislative aide for Representative Coghill.
You want to pull that mic up a little bit, Reneva, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Coghill has long been looking for what we refer to as the low-hanging apples in the Medicaid system to make sure that people who utilize Medicaid are really the people who really need Medicaid. And House Bill 426 started out addressing some of the what we consider abuses of the system. However, because of federal laws, a lot of what we tried to do, we are now asking the department to come up with solutions to. One of those would include a step parent whose income is not calculated into a household income to qualify for Medicaid Denali Kid Care. Under the current federal law and how Alaska does it, if a step-parent's income disqualifies children from Denali Kid Care, their income is subtracted from the household income. And we will be addressing that next year after we get recommendations back from the department. But some of the things we wanted to address are in this bill. On page, and I will have the department go through their sections of the bill. As you remember, last year, Representative Coghill took hostage to some of the governor's China legislation and rolled them into his bill. This year, they are returning the favor and they're rolling some of their fixes for Medicaid and compliance with federal law into House Bill 426. Section 11 directs the department to prepare a report for the legislature next spring.
Do we need to accept the CS?
Madam Chair, it's an amendment. It's not a CS.
Hess version.
Okay, we're still with Hess. Okay, very good. I got my bills mixed up. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, it's actually the C version. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Which is the Hess Committee version.
Okay.
And in section 11 on page 9, we are asking the department to look at ways to reduce medical assistance expenditures for mental health treatment facilities, including in-state and out-of-state residential treatment centers and substance abuse treatment facilities. And this comes from concern that we have a policy now where a child can be placed in a residential treatment center in the lower 48, and once they are there for 30 days, they qualify for Denali Kid Care. Part of this is because insurance companies, when they're assessing patients in those residential treatment centers, determine that they are paying for residential services at levels higher than what the resident actually needs. So they are paying, let's say, a level 5 for what they consider the child to need a level 2 treatment. So they no longer cover the child. Then Denali Kid Care kicks in, and we want the department to determine if they are paying a higher rate than they should be paying. And again, this goes back to making sure that the Medicaid money really goes to people that need it and qualify for it. We also want them to look at parental responsibilities and see how we can get more parental participation in paying for health care for kids. And this would include the step-parent theory. We also want them to maximize third-party resources, which part of this bill will do, and the department will explain that to you. There is another section here that is remaining from the representative's bill, and it requires on page 7, section 7, it requires that any child under 18 years of age, they have to be signed up for Denali Kid Care by their parent or legal guardian. And there's a couple of exceptions to this case, but Representative Coghill has a very strong feeling that parents need to be involved in medical treatment of children. And this just ensures that under existing conditions, a girl could run away from home at 15 years of age, and her 19 or 20-year-old boyfriend could sign her up for medical assistance. Representative Coghill just feels that the parents need to be notified and they need to have a say in some of the medical decisions. At this point, I'll just briefly address Amendment Number 2, which consolidates Amendment Number 1, and we will have one small amendment to the amendment, but after the HES committee heard this bill, Madam Chair, and you were at the committee hearing, we were given a U.S. Supreme Court decision that was brought down on Monday, which made certain language in this bill unconstitutional because of the decision. And I went back to our legal department and to Department of Law and just asked them to preserve as much as we could for the Department of Law's subrogation rights to go to third parties for reimbursement, but make sure that the bill complied with federal law and with the decision on Monday. So with that, I will turn it over to the department to explain their sections of the bill.
Are you ready to move the amendment, Reneva?
Madam Chair, if I can have Stacy up here, yes.
Yes. Okay, Reneva, do we need both the ones marked Amendment Number 1 and Amendment Number 2, or only Number 2?
Madam Chair, only Amendment Number 2, and we would propose an amendment to that amendment.
Okay. Well, I will move Amendment Number 2. Is that correct, Mindy? Okay. And your amendment to the amendment is?
Madam Chair,
is there objection to adopting Amendment Number 2? We can? Okay.
I didn't hear
go
that.
Ahead and what is your amendment to the
Madam Chair, on page 6, line 3, we are deleting subsection 2.
What? Give me the page number again.
Page 6.
Of the bill.
Of the bill.
Of the bill, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Now, is that going to be an amendment we're going to add to Amendment Number 2?
Yes, Madam Chair. Page 6, line 3, we are deleting subsection 2. We are deleting line 3. And to make that work properly, on page 5, we should delete on line 31, subsection, the subsection, parentheses 1.
Reading 1, making full repayment to the department, cost of past medical.
Madam Chair, what we would do on line 31, we're getting rid of the number 1 so that actually that will be subsection B, and it will read, if you look at line 30, maintaining public assistance or medical assistance eligibility without first making full payment to the department for costs, etc.
Very good. I understand. And you're just going to delete subline 2 there.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Brief at ease, please. Yes, Mindy. We're back on the record. Reneva, would you please explain to us amendment number 2? We will take up the additional amendment in amendment number 3. I will move amendment number 2 if you haven't already. And object for discussion. You want to go ahead and explain it, please? Or Tracy, Stacy?
Yes. For the record, Stacy Crayley from the Department of Law, and I'll walk through amendment 2 with you, explain to you the changes that were made in response to the Supreme Court decision that came out earlier this week that significantly changed how the Department of Law was hoping to handle subrogation claims. I don't know what's the most expedient way to walk through this, but if you go to your version C, page 2, well, actually it starts on, okay, you have a marked up copy of the bill?
No.
Okay, so page 2, lines 27 through 30. I'll go through the substantive issues. There's some minor language changes that you'll see in the amendment, and if you have questions about those, I'd be happy to answer those technical changes. But the more...
Yeah, I understand. As a marked up copy.
Okay. So again, on page 2, line 27 through 30, we have in discussion with some folks from the Division of Insurance and some other insurance folks have made an adjustment to 4705070B. Which properly identifies the amount of subrogation interest or money that we can recover on a lien or subrogation interest. So that is the amendment there, more clarifying language. We have significant changes include on page 3, we deleted lines 13 through 23. Which would be subparagraph B and C of 4705071 in the C version. Again, those provisions are deleted because as they were proposed would be inconsistent with the Supreme Court's ruling regarding subrogation recovery by the state. Okay. Of course, there's the technical renumbering and changes on line, let me double check this here. Page 3, line 31, subparagraph 3 is deleted. There's some minor changes under subparagraph 1, but those are just to make consistent. Page 3, line 27. We deleted line 31 on page 3 and line 1 and 2, actually line through line...
Five
on the on page. This gets confusing here, doesn't it? Okay. And then renumbered the phrase, the remaining paragraph there on page 4, line 31. We deleted. Page 4, line 31, and then on page 5, all the way through line 10, again, and to make the provisions compliant with the Supreme Court's decision. Mm-hmm. Renumbered the following paragraph, and then going on to the next section, 4705073, we deleted line 15 through line 21, once again, to make the language consistent with the Supreme Court decision. Renumbered the following paragraph, or relettered the following paragraphs, and I guess this the change that Ms. Moss was talking about previously is on the next page, and I don't know if it's in this amendment or we're going to do a separate one. Okay. All right, so now we're on page 6, and we deleted lines 4 through lines 10, again, to comply with the Supreme Court decision, and made technical corrections to on line 11, relettered the paragraphs to paragraphs C and D, and made correcting amendments there. Okay. So it's a significant changes to comply with the Supreme Court's decision, and I think we've made those, and there's another amendment, because we did miss one thing, and that one amendment we'll need to make that correction.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions about the amended language and or about the amendment? I'll withdraw my objection. Is there objection to amendment number 2? Amendment number 2 is adopted. Would you move amendment number 3, please? Oh, I'll move amendment number 3. And would you explain it, please?
Okay, that was the discussion we were just having previously in attempting to amend the amendment. And what that does is it will, on page 5, line 31, it will delete the number 1, the subparagraph 1. And then on page 6, line 3, it will delete the entire line, line 3, which is a subparagraph 2, so that it is consistent with the Supreme Court decision. The consent provisions we were hoping to have would be inconsistent with the Supreme Court's decision.
Are we supposed to also delete lines 1 and 2 on page 6?
Madam Chair, no. That is part of what is now subsection B of 4705073.
Okay, could you read that for me then?
Certainly. Starting with line 30, maintaining public assistance or medical assistance eligibility without first making full repayment to the department for costs of past medical assistance services provided to the medical assistant recipient related to that action or claim.
We're removed. Okay, thank you very much. Very good. Are there any more questions about amendment number 3? I'll remove my objection. Amendment number 3 is adopted. Now we're on the new page. Any further explanation? Anything else, Stacy?
Just briefly, that the provisions under sections 2 and 3 of the bill, as amended, we believe comply with the Supreme Court's decision in Allborn that we came down earlier this week. Identifying and characterizing how the state can allocate funds that are recovered for under third-party lien and subrogation issues. We've created a system where we're trying to get some cooperation and notice from attorneys and from recipients so that we can participate and assert our interest. Now with the Supreme Court's decision, we're have a better idea of how we can do that and how we can allocate those recoveries once we do become involved. So that's what the provisions do. With respect to sections 2 and 3 of the bill.
And Madam Chair, could I add that we have for the past 5 days been working very closely with Department of Law, Division of Insurance, the insurance companies, and with the trial attorneys, trying to make this bill as good as we could get it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We have a couple of people here in the room who have signed up to testify. This is from this morning. Is Kevin Henderson in the room? Kevin, are you ready to testify, please?
Yeah, my name is Kevin Henderson with the Department of Health and Social Services, and although I'm not doing this particular job at the moment, I am coming to you from the position of being the Medicaid Eligibility Program Officer with the division. And so I was here just as a representative of the department to talk about sections 5, 6, and 7 of the bill, which follow the same theme as the rest of this bill in terms of wanting to make sure that those who can pay do pay. And but these three sections deal specifically with not insurance companies, but with individual persons trying to become eligible for Medicaid and the financial rules that surround them. So very briefly, most of the time when I talk about this stuff, eyes glaze over, and this is not very exciting stuff, but we'll get through it. Section 5 gives the department the ability to garnish the PFD of an individual recipient if they have been found to have violated the program rules, we also have a provision for getting reimbursement for when they have received continued benefits pending a fair hearing, and they lost the fair hearing. That whole rule is about trying to prevent people from just frivolously, requesting a fair hearing just to get those continued benefits. So anyway, federal policy has recently changed on this that has allowed the department to pursue the PFD for medical assistance. We already do it for other public assistance programs. Section six does a number of things, but primarily looks at annuities. And generally speaking, Medicaid, for individuals who are seeking long-term care services, we go back and look at an individual's financial history prior to the time they've come on to Medicaid, and we look for what we call a transfer of asset. In other words, it's any action in which they've basically given money away or hidden money or made it inaccessible for the purpose of qualifying for Medicaid. And in some states, people, very creative industry has cropped up with using annuities that had balloon payments and that seem to circumvent the Medicaid eligibility rules. And this just, there is federal law that's changed behind this, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But this basically puts annuities that an individual would purchase on the same playing field as trusts, and puts a lot of restrictions on their use to make sure that Medicaid is not cheated out of money, basically.
Madam Chair, can I just ask a question?
Yes, Wilson.
Mr. Henderson, if you have an annuity that's in more than one name, how does, and the person, and only one person is asking for assistance, what effect does this have on it?
Through the chair, I can check on that. I believe we're mostly talking about annuities that individuals have purchased with their own money, in which there is only one annuitant.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Go ahead, Kevin.
Section 7 is a little more complicated. It has a number of provisions. The first one, the first two in Section 7 of the bill, subsections J and K, address the right and the procedures for who can apply for Medicaid on behalf of a minor. And this is the section that Reneva has already mentioned. I think she's already talked about that. I think I'll just move on unless there's questions about that. Subsection L, again, is a new requirement that federal policy has recently loosened up that will allow us now to make as a condition of eligibility for Medicaid that someone who is eligible for Medicare be obligated to apply and enroll in Medicare. And for most seniors, those 65 and over, this isn't really a problem. Most of them do, apply for Medicare. But Medicare does have some rules for individuals who are younger than 65 if they have certain disabilities or certain complex medical conditions. And this would allow us to make sure that those individuals sign up for Medicare. And Medicare pays first. It's 100% federal money, as you know. And so it's basically a cost avoidance mechanism. We're not talking about a lot of impacting a lot of people, but generally those people who we are going to touch with this are often very expensive individuals in terms of the health care costs that they have. Subsection M of this bill is it's kind of technical as you look at it, but what it basically does is embrace the federal requirements of the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005, which have a lot in them about what we call transfer of assets for less than fair market value. They have things in there about trusts and Basically, what they do is make the look-back period longer. We're going to go back 5 years prior to the date of application and look for those transfers. The penalty period, when there is a penalty period, what that means is we exclude them. They're ineligible for Medicaid for the period of time that we determine. This rule will allow us to actually start that penalty period right at the time they apply. So they get basically, they get the maximum penalty applied to them in this case. Sometimes if the transfer occurred years, you know, a couple years before, and the penalty would have run out even by the time they had come and applied for Medicaid. So this will prevent that. Allows us to put multiple transfers together into one. Puts a few restrictions on the use of life estates. And I think that federal law is behind a lot of this stuff, but I think it's going to be very important to have the legislature's embracing and blessing, basically, of this provision to, in terms of when we go out to implement it. So, subsection N is kind of a brand new policy, again, part of the Deficit Reduction Act, but this bill goes a little bit further with it. The one rule that the new Medicaid eligibility rule that was addressed by this federal legislation allows or requires states actually to put a cap on the value, the equity value of a home. If it's over $500,000, basically they're not eligible. If the equity value is over $500,000, they're not eligible. There's nothing in here that precludes them from taking out a second mortgage or doing some of those, managing their assets. But the federal bill applies that new rule to long-term care Medicaid recipients. This bill actually makes it apply to almost all other eligibility categories. Not all of them, but almost all of them. So,
are there any questions for Kevin? Thanks for the explanation on that. Senator Stebbin.
I have a quick question. When we move from 3 years to 5 years, Madam Chairman, is there any impact on people that the clock is running now, but they haven't run for 3 years, or is it the start date?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Stebbin. This would apply, if this everything goes through, this would basically apply July 1st. So we'd be looking at transfers that occurred once this bill was in effect, or when, which would be at July 1st of this year. So we would be looking, yeah, we would start to go back 5 years, but we couldn't really apply the new transfer rules until, unless it was a transfer that occurred after July 1st of this year.
Thank you very much. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure who to direct the question to, but we have several fiscal notes, and I wonder if someone could go over the fiscal notes with us.
Okay, we'll have Janet's here.
Yes.
Thank you, Kevin.
Okay, thank you.
We have some nice fiscal notes, too.
Yeah, they're so unusual to be here.
You want to read them out loud and put them on the record? Thank you, Janet.
For the record, Janet Clark, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health and Social Services. Madam Chairman, there are five different fiscal notes that you have in your packet. And I hope that you also have a spreadsheet, a long spreadsheet that has red negative numbers on it. As Senator Bundy recognized, these fiscal notes provide a savings to the medical assistance Medicaid budget with this legislation. And so I'd really like to go through the long sheet because we do have five fiscal notes, and this is kind of a combination of the fiscal impact, and it's tied to each one of the sections so that you can see the impact of the sections. First of all, just to let you know, our assumptions on the fiscal note is that in year one, we assume that we will not have regulations in place until April 1st, and so the savings are calculated at 25% of FY 2007. So that is one of the reasons that there's a large difference in FY 2007. However, even in FY 2007, we are projecting that there will be a negative
or a savings of $1,074,200 in general funds and a total savings of almost $2.6 million in fiscal year 2007. In fiscal year 2008, the numbers obviously jump up with the full year of savings impacted, and we are projecting a total savings of a little over $10.9 million and a general fund savings of almost $5.1 million in fiscal year 2008. As you look at the sections of the bill, Section 7, subsection L, is the primary one that generates the largest amount of savings in this bill. And that is the provision that requires that those individuals who are eligible for Medicare, the federal program, are required to apply for that first before they receive Medicaid. And we have projected with the number of individuals, there's 1,800 that are eligible for Medicare, and with the average annual cost of $6,500 per individual, you can see that that generates that significant savings in the bill. The other savings, again, are not as significant, but nonetheless add up in sections 1 through 4. In the subrogation sections, we see a slight amount of savings in year one again, and that grows in year two. Garnishment of permanent fund dividends, section 5, we see a relatively small amount of savings from that section. Section 6, we don't think we'll have a savings, but it'll be a cost avoidance. So in other words, we won't have to pay costs in the future, but there aren't costs we're paying now. Section 7, J through K, we see, a small amount of savings relative to the larger sections in subsections J through K. And subsections M and section 7 and subsection N, also we see a small amount of savings. So overall, we're pleased to be able to bring a Medicaid item that has a savings number attached to it, Madam Chairman, and would recommend approval of the bill.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Janet. Does that answer your question, Senator Bundy?
Okay. Good job on the layout here, too. Easy to read. Thanks.
Donna McCready? Is Donna McCready in the room? Okay. Are there further questions about the legislation? Oh. Are you Donna McCready? Come right to the...
I still apologize. I was out speaking with legal services just to hopefully...
no problem.
...with a couple of...
That's quite all right.
All right. I apologize. My name is Donna McCready. I'm here with the Alaska Action Trust. I'm also here for myself. I'm a practicing attorney. I want to give a lot of credit to Reneva Moss and to the Office of Legal Services, because they've done a lot of work on this bill in the last couple of days to try to make it comply with federal law, and I think that they deserve a lot of credit for that. I did have a couple of just points of concern, and one of them I just spoke with legal services about, and I think she's in agreement with me that on page 5, and it would be line 31, I think they had intended to take out of that subsection B1 the word full. And again, the section B1, the line is making full repayment to the department for cost of past medical assistance services provided, etc. And the word full was taken out in other places, and I think they meant to take it out of that particular sentence as well. And that would make it in compliance with the U.S. Supreme Court decision that came down on Monday.
And that's the word full on it line is. 31 of page 5. Okay.
Yes. And then I just have a couple of other concerns, just because because this U.S. Supreme Court decision that was a unanimous decision that came down Monday affected just about not every provision of this bill, but many provisions. I guess my thought or recommendation to this committee is to be cautious about a couple of provisions to make sure that they in fact are in compliance with federal law. And let me just go through them. And I was just speaking with Legal Services about one of them. On Section 6, which is on page 7, and I think Mr. Henderson was just talking about this provision, under F1, it seems that this is requiring the state to receive all of the trust or annuity assets remaining at the death of the individual, and subject to the maximum amount that equals the total medical assistance paid. And my only concern is that under the Medicaid statute, under 42 U.S.C. 1396P, under certain circumstances, it won't allow the state to take funds if there's a surviving spouse or if there's a child who's under 21. And I'm not going to present myself as an expert on federal Medicaid law. I am not. But just in looking at those provisions, it raises a concern to me that this is not consistent with federal Medicaid law, and it could create some liability for the state. Because if the state were to go in and take annuity assets when that was not provided for under federal law, that is under the Medicaid statute, which creates this whole system, it could create some liability for the state. And I would just ask that that be looked at a little more closely to make sure it's in compliance with federal law. Similarly, Section 9 of the bill, which is on page 9. Section 9 repeals Alaska Statute 4705070E, and essentially what that section provided for was to allow the state to waive its subrogation rights if there was a case of undue hardship for the recipient. And it's my reading of, again, the federal Medicaid statute, that in certain circumstances the state is required to consider undue hardship and required to look at undue hardship for the recipient to determine whether or not it's appropriate to waive their subrogation rights. Now, I think practically it's very, very rare that the state has ever waived its subrogation rights. So I think it creates an unnecessary problem for the state to repeal Section E of 4705070E, because I think that creates an inconsistency with federal Medicaid law that could create some problems for the state unnecessarily. So that's my other recommendation to the committee, that it not accept this recommendation for Section 9, and that it actually keep AS 4705.
Not to repeal that. Okay.
Finally, a couple of just practical considerations. And if I could direct the committee's attention to page 4. And I'm looking under the section 4705072, duty of the attorney for medical assistance recipient. I think A and B are perfectly fine. That seems consistent with federal law, and it makes sense that whenever I'm representing somebody who's a Medicaid recipient, you know, I want to give notice to the state because if I settle or in some way get a judgment for my client without notifying the state, I'm putting myself and the client at great risk, because the client needs to know that there's a Medicaid lien out there, and we need to figure out exactly what that amount is going to be before we distribute funds to the client or anyone else, so everybody knows what page we're on. Otherwise, I'm creating a huge problem for myself and my client. The problem I have with this section is subsection C, when it says an attorney who represents a medical assistance recipient shall give the Attorney General's office 30 days notice before any judgment, award, or settlement is satisfied in an action or claim, etc. The 30 days notice is what I'm concerned about, not concerned about the sections A and B that require just general notice of a claim. And the reason why, and I think this actually ends up being counterproductive for the state if you have a 30-day notice requirement, and here's why. I could be in trial in a case, and the defendant, the person who's hurt my client, the reason why there's a claim there to begin with, suppose they make a settlement offer, and as we're seating a jury or right after the jury's seated, I may not be able to give the state 30 days notice. I may have to make a decision right then and there based on everything I know about the case, the risks and benefits, what could happen to my client under Rule 82. And so I might have to make a decision about settling that case. If I am required to give the state 30 days notice, I'm not sure I can do that at that point. And it could be that if I settle that case, I've been in contact with this with the state attorney general's office, and let's say the defendant who's caused the harm, we come up with an agreement, they issue a check to my trust account 2 weeks after we've reached an agreement in principle, and I could distribute funds to the state right then and there and to everyone else. It's just not very practical to have this 30-day notice requirement. I think it creates problems, and it could create delay in the state getting reimbursed. That's a problem. I would also just let the committee know it's not necessary because attorneys under at least ethics opinions, and I can think of 198.3, are required, if there's a valid lien or an assignment out there, we're required to separate funds and to hold those funds safe for that third party who may have a valid lien or a valid claim. So it's really not necessary. And I think that the provisions A and B also protect the concern that the state has that they're notified about any potential claim that's out there. And I think that may one last thing, and very briefly. I say it last because it's perhaps the least of concern, but it is a question. On the same page, we're on page 4, and we're on subsection 3 of 4705071, which is the duty of a medical assistance recipient. And this is new language that's being added to the law, and it puts on the recipient, if the chair is with me, it requires the recipient to make an application for all available third-party resources that may be used to provide or pay the cost of care or services received by the medical assistance recipient, or that may be used to finance reimbursement to the state for the cost of care. And that sounds fine. It does go beyond what federal law requires of the recipient. But I think one of the practical concerns is if the only available third-party resource is a defendant or, you know, someone who's caused harm to that person, there's a little bit of a concern that this would somehow put an onus or a duty on the recipient to file a lawsuit against that person. And any time a plaintiff files a lawsuit, they take on certain risks, not only filing fees and that sort of thing, but they are then subject to Rule 82s where they may have to pay a judgment at the end of the day. And I don't think anyone in this room wants to see more litigation, and I think everybody would like to see less. And I think that the concern that I expressed could be remedied by just simply adding it a sentence at the end saying this doesn't require a recipient to file a civil or other action, in order to fulfill this obligation. Something of that nature, I think, could fix that problem. But it does raise a concern.
Okay. Any questions for Barbara? Well, Barbara, I'm going to give you and Stacy and whoever else is involved some homework and let you go talk about this. And then we'll bring this back up in about 45 minutes. Or whoever else you were talking to.
I'm through.
Okay, very good. If you want to come into my office, you may. And
thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And we'll set that aside. Are there any other questions on 426? We'll set that aside. And hopefully get back to it this evening. Okay. Okay, on House Bill 13, is Representative Gatto here? Oh, thank you, good. House Bill 13. Welcome.
Thanks, Madam Chair. May I have my aide sit next to me up here for support?
Only if he has a seatbelt on that chair.
So right ahead.
helmets.
And a CO2 detector.
Ooh, we're hurting now.
Zingers.
Welcome, go ahead.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This is a bill that will spend $131 million plus a whole lot more because it doesn't include any of the cost to for school construction that has an indeterminate fiscal note. What the bill does do, though, is it does authorize reimbursement at 70% for certain schools and 60% for other. Those that meet the Department of Education Early Development requirements get 70%, and those that do not get 60%. It increases, there was an error that this bill fixes.
Speak at ease, please. Version T for our working document for House Bill 13, and I'll object for explanation. Is that not the one we have?
I don't have that version, Madam Chair, but if it is just the version, the previous version with a certain amendment that I'm consulted about, then I am familiar with it.
Back on the record, Representative Gatto, yes, the language is
okay. And I have version T with me, thank you.
Yes. Uh-huh.
If I can continue, there is $2 million in this bill that simply allows for the North Slope to get in on the same program that every other district was involved in, and it was simply an oversight in previous years that did not include school sizes of a certain number that qualified. And so it required $2 million additional to simply allow North Slope District to qualify. It certainly increases the student base allocation by $461 to a total of $5,380 per student, which is a $96 million addition. It does have the addition of the ICER study, but only 1/4 of it. In order to implement the ICER study and not have anyone lose money, we have the hold harmless provision. That whole harmless provision costs $24 million plus. That ICER study hold harmless provision and the entire cost differential is for a single year, so those numbers will disappear in the following year unless...
Now, is that Section 5? Yeah, if you could just kind of give us
I guess we're renumbered. Six. Yeah.
This is Cody Rice, staff to Representative Gatto. That's correct. It is Section 5.
Just to direct you to Section 5.
Section 5 is the 1/4 implementation, yeah. And Section 6 is the repeal. The effective date puts Section 6 into effect July 1st, 2007. And you'll see that as Section 11 on page 14.
Go ahead.
In addition, there's a grant program similar to the old logs that adds $81 per student, and this adds $10 million to the cost. And the grand total for all of these things is $131 million, not counting the amendment that has been added. The amendment that is Public School Performance Incentive Program, which okay. I had not... seen before.
Are there any questions? Is
Senator Bundy.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. We know that there are school districts with cost differential problems and they're struggling. Just like to reemphasize what I heard, that this is a one-time temporary fix. This is not a long-term fix. And should we choose not to do this next year, while I anticipate the argument will be, I refuse to accept the argument that then we have reduced funding for schools. Mm-hmm. This is a one-time increment, and it is not figured into the base. And if it is not repeated next year, it is not a reduction in state support for education.
Thank you. I agree. Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to, for the record also, I was involved in the negotiations to try to reach some middle ground, and we did that. But I wouldn't want anybody to think that my agreement to do what we've done here in any way, shape, or form indicates my recognition that the ICER study is worth the paper it's written on. It is not. It is merely a proxy to reach agreement. And that's the way I've looked at it. That's the way the agreement is. It doesn't set precedent, and that is shown by the automatic reversion to the existing cost factors. So I want that to be very clear. And then I have another subject when you're ready for another subject.
Okay. And you've made yourself very clear on that in numerous discussions. And so and it's also brought up the point that it's going to be probably very necessary next year for folks in this building to undertake a major redo and bring us to a new formula. We simply do not have time this year. Does someone else have his? Oh, Senator Stedman.
Yes, I'd like to just reiterate that, Madam Chairman, that this is a temporary solution to a rather almost permanent problem, and that we'll address it in a more permanent fashion next year.
Yes,
because of just the time element that we're faced with this year.
That's right. Senator Wilken.
You know, and I just have to put on the record, too, the foundation formula has been a bit maligned,
yes.
And it isn't broken at all. It's functioning very well. There's a component in the foundation formula that doesn't recognize a diminishment of students. And we have some school districts that have had significant reductions in students, and the formula doesn't contemplate spreading the fixed costs over reduced students. And it's a step down, it's not a slope. So we need to work on that. But other than that, the foundation formula is alive and well. And this recognizes that while we're increasing the student dollar at a rate that even I couldn't have believed 3 or 4 years ago, we're still educating the same number of students that we're educating in 1999. So the formula has to understand and appreciate that we will have districts that go up, and we will have districts that go down. And so that's the piece that we really need to concentrate on. And Madam Chair, as you said, that's something I think we all could agree on won't get done in the last 2 weeks of a session.
Absolutely.
Senator.
Yes, I'd like to just add, Madam Chairman, it may not be broken in some parts of the state, but that system is definitely broken in District A.
Thank you.
No doubt about it.
Okay. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, there's several parts of this that I haven't perhaps paid enough attention to, but I'm startled at the costs. And I've seen information here in the last couple, 3 days that indicates that we may have, against all odds, spent our entire, quote, surplus and maybe, in fact, in the hole. And pieces of legislation going through here are going to exacerbate that situation, and I'm very concerned about that. Thank you.
You know, you have to remember, though, that we do have $600 million in two different savings accounts, and then there's another nearly $600 million for a form of savings for pre-funding of K-12 education. So there's some set aside.
which we certainly haven't enjoyed in previous years to the extent we are this year.
Yeah, that's right. And I have maybe, for whatever reason, seen about $300 million worth of surprises cross this table in the last couple, 3 days that still cause me great concern.
Yeah, and all the members at this table got to vote on it. Senator Stedman.
Madam Chairman, maybe you could refresh my memory. We put a substantial amount away in an investment account to help invest into the future gas line.
Yes, we did.
And there was a large portion put into a trust for future help in energy. So yes, depending on how we want to count spending and how we want to count savings, we have put substantial dollars forward.
I've never seen it like that in this body before. Perhaps Senator Hoffman has, since he's been here longer than everyone else, but I don't recall. Senator Wilkin.
A couple things, ma'am. Also, we should remember, and for those that are in the education community, should be prepared to go to their assemblies with the money that I anticipate is going to come in another vehicle here in the way of revenue sharing. We've tried to, I hope, recognize that there are those areas in organized Alaska that support their schools, and they will get a bonus or certainly a supplement. And that money, while it goes to their assemblies, can be most suitably roped off and claimed as education money. So I think that those that are reading and those that are watching and us that are here that represent organized Alaska that are helping pay their way for their schools ought to mobilize the education community in our communities so that they claim that supplement as education money. And I haven't seen the final numbers, but it should be significant. I know what it is in my town. So I just call that as a call to arms, I guess, in recognition that there are people that are supporting their schools, and the legislature's recognized it. Now they have to go get the money.
Yes, that's exactly correct. Are there other questions? Representative Gatto.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. It's just very important to notice and keep in mind that 24 plus million is going to be withdrawn at the end of its usable year, and the 10 plus grant will also disappear. So that at the beginning of next year, the base will be already $35 million less than we have appropriated this year. And that'll be the starting point for changing the student base allocation. Now, we'll certainly be able to go back and do another grant and continue the ICER, but it's very important to notice that those automatically disappear.
Thank you for that. Senator Stedman. And Senator Wilkin, I'm sorry.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to address one other thing. And before I do that, Representative Gatto, don't snatch a defeat from the job of victory here, please.
It's just honesty, sir, just honesty.
He didn't mean it.
I wanted to address for my friend from the North Slope the CS represents, on page 9 of the old bill, version B.A, there's a section, a paragraph in there, section H, that is, and Representative Gatto mentioned it, it's a $2 million set aside for municipalities with a population of 1,500 to 1,800. That's specific to the North Slope. That was inserted on the House side, and of course, we were wondering where that came from. And Representative Gatto, and it's been represented to me that this was that they had been slighted or ignored, or that there wasn't that they weren't part of the. You remember last year we did a bunch of bonding and a bunch of grants as part of the final package. So when we looked at that, the fact of the matter was, they couldn't have been ignored or slighted, because in no list last year was there any request for any sort of education funding for capital from the North Slope Borough. Not in the governor's capital budget, in the capital budget that we were considering, on the major maintenance list, or on the school construction. So they weren't funded because there wasn't a request, and there were other school districts in there the same way that for whatever reason didn't have a request for monies. So to come back a year later and say, well, we should have been there, or we were slighted, or we were ignored, I just would offer that that's really not the case if you look at the record, and that's why I requested to have that paragraph removed. So just wanted to explain that to my friend and also for the record.
Okay, thank you very much. Brief at ease, please. Just a moment. Sure. Did you... We're back on the record. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding all the discussion has been about the funding of schools, and I would like to make comment on the school construction aspect of this for municipal bonds. We still have today facing the state of Alaska the Kasaili case, and we have not addressed any school construction for rural schools. And, you know, I think that while we are contemplating extending the authority under this particular piece of legislation, there was an amendment by Senator Olson to try to address the school construction list at this table. And by not addressing construction of schools, I think it's exasperating the lawsuit, and I think it's hopefully the school construction list in the capital budget can be addressed on the other side. Without that, I think that the need for schools in rural Alaska that we set as assembly for is going to further increase the problems of that lawsuit. And I just wanted to put that on the record. Hopefully that can be addressed by the House with the school, with the capital budget.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any other, Senator Olson?
Madam Chairman, thank you very much for recognizing me. First of all, I'd like to go ahead and adamantly oppose the movement by the Senator from Fairbanks about moving the section that's related to the North Slope Borough School District. Certainly, as we look at bond debt reimbursement, this is for schools that the borough has voted to build, and they don't necessarily appear on any list. I think even if you look at last year's funding bill, there were other schools that weren't on any list that were out there. And so I'd just like to point that out, that there is the feeling of being slighted, there is the feeling of being ignored. In fact, what I'd really like to do is call the Department of Education's finance person up here, Eddie Jeans, to show that there are indeed valid North Slope Borough projects that, as well as other projects throughout the state, they weren't on any list. So I think that there is a problem with a feeling of being ignored, a feeling of being, the North Slope is feeling like a stepchild out there. So with that, Madam Chairman, I respectfully ask Eddie Jeans to come up here.
I'd be happy to have Eddie Jeans come up.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Eddie Jeans, could you join us, please?
Mr. Welcome. Jeans, do you understand my question? Or did you understand?
I'm sure he does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's your question?
Yeah.
For the record, Eddie Jeans, the Director of School Finance for the Department of Education. Madam Chair, I do understand the question, and to be quite frank, I haven't had an opportunity to go back and look at all the lists. What I can tell you is North Slope did have a bond election in November in which they passed a $2 million bond proposition for district-wide maintenance, and the House felt that it was appropriate to put it in that section of the bill and provide reimbursement. That's where we're at.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Eddie? Go ahead.
I'd like to comment on that. Madam Chairman, I think if you look at the comments that were made before about schools paying their way, bonding to try and get their projects done, we just heard of a bond that happened last night as well, or the night before, in one of the districts that's around the state. And so with that, I just want to make and put it on the record that there are school districts out there that are trying to go ahead and add their contribution to it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Appreciate your interest. Senator Wilkin, did you have anything further?
Did
you have your hand?
If I did.
Go ahead.
While Eddie's at the table, back in February we got this report, and this was a part of the legislation we had a special session for a few, 3 years ago perhaps. And this report shows the cost of this program that we're extending. And there's a lot of good information. It's really a good report. But in your packet, there's a piece that looks like this and like this.
Yes.
And it's just, we don't have to do it now, but it's just interesting to see the effect of that legislation we had 3 years ago, I think it was, Eddie. On the front, the first page you see there through FY26, that we're going to bond for, it's going to cost us $825 million, and we're going to pay $485 million in interest. And that speaks perhaps to we may someday want to pay cash for things like that and keep the $485 million for ourselves. And then in the appendix, this is just to flip through, but it's just interesting to see that our decisions at this table and the people that put that in place, I mean, it really does go statewide, and people take advantage of it, and it builds a better school system. So I just wanted to highlight that because Eddie put that report together, and it shouldn't go unnoticed that these are very expensive, but at the same time, they're also part of what makes the Alaska education system a great system. So I just wanted to bring that to the committee's attention, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or any other questions, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't necessarily have a comment. What I'd like to do is move to reinstate that section on page 9, lines 8 through 10, to put it the way it was when it originally came across. Okay. I'd like to move that amendment.
Okay, and Senator Wilkin objects. And I think if you look in version BA, you'll find that on pages 8, section 3. The only two changes are just the renumbering and the amount of money in the two different spots, one on page 8 and one on page 9. Brief of these, please. Okay, any further comment about amendment number one? Amendment number two? Objection is maintained.
Can I speak to the objection?
Yes, you may.
Madam Chair, this isn't exactly pleasant, but at the same time, we do have a process, and we spent a lot of time last year going through all the lists and trying to pick and what was grants, what was bond authorization. And nowhere on any of those lists was a request from the North Slope Borough. So there was no request, so there was no allocation to that student population in the bill. And so now we come a year later and we say, oh, well, we forgot to be there, so therefore we need to be recognized. I mean, if we allow that to happen, that'll happen every year. Folks will do things that they want to do while we're out of session and come back and ask for reimbursement. And that's not the way the system works. It would be different if they were on a list and we said, oh, we're not going to do that. But that's not the case. It just wasn't anywhere in the three lists that we looked at was a request. So it was essentially transparent. We couldn't see it. So I think we're, in spite of, and I appreciate Senator Olson's concern, but at the same time, I think we should have respect for the process and how we authorize bonds and how we appropriate grants. So with that, I would encourage a no vote.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Certainly the co-chair of finance has some valid points that are out there, but I would want to reiterate that there are were as late as last year people that had schools that were not on any list, and that we've even seen this year where we've gone through and seen one of the schools that was number 20 on the list get up there. And so there certainly is a process, but there are extenuating circumstances where sometimes we don't necessarily follow it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I'm not going to go ahead and go out there and stop it. I'm just trying to reinsert the section that was there to put the rest of the schools that have been requested by the people from the state of Alaska and put them on an equal playing field.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I'm a little confused. They did, and I don't have that much background on what went on up in the North Slope, but there was an election to cover a bond offering, and what? Because I had communities that weren't on the list, any list last year, that were left off. And it's just the way it worked out, unfortunately. You know, they were either on there or they weren't, and there was no advance warning to get on them, dealing with the major maintenance list. And I was just wondering if we can get a little bit of background, if they can, in this particular case, if this bill passes, still go through the process and get reimbursed, or what? I'm still a little confused.
In future.
In the future.
If I understand it, is that not correct?
This would be a future bond election?
Madam Chair, that's exactly what would have to occur. If this piece of legislation passes, the program is actually extended for another 2 years at the same rates that are under last year's provision. But what North Slope would have to do is go back to the voters again and get voter approval. So they would have to incur the cost of the election for the same project. So
okay.
That's the process.
Thank you very much. Senator Stedman.
I have a school in my district, Schoenbar, that's been having some troubles, and we're all familiar with it because it's been up the table around several times. That particular school is getting refurbished now, and at the end of the refurbishment, there's going to be an application process, as I understand it, to either be on the major maintenance list and or for the 70-30 debt reimbursement. Is this a similar issue that the North Slope is facing, or is this buildings that have already been built, or I'm still trying to put the pieces of this puzzle together.
Through the chair, Representative or Senator Stedman, the work that's going on at Schoenbar right now, the borough has taken on under using their own finances. If this bill passes, the debt reimbursement program will be open again October 1st of this year, and Ketchikan can go out and have voters approve those bonds for that additional work that's going on and participate in the debt reimbursement program. Or they can submit an application to get on our CIP list, and we will rank them and prioritize them with all the other state needs. So it's up to the local district how they want to best go after those state reimbursements, whether through the grant program or debt reimbursement.
If I could, Madam Chairman, just as a follow-up. So this is similar treatment that the North Slope Borough would face.
Yes.
So.
Madam Chair, if I could ask Eddie Jeans one question. What are the, if there are any, valid projects up on the North Slope that would either qualify for this or would be written under this area?
Through the Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm sure there's a number of major maintenance projects that could be undertaken by the North Slope Borough, but they have not submitted those to the department for consideration at this time. So once again, once this debt bill passes, then it makes the program available to districts. They submit a new application to us under the debt reimbursement program, and they go back to the voters and seek approval to participate in the state reimbursement program.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Eddie, I think it's helpful, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we set these sections up by population, student population, we don't approve the projects. All we do is approve a cap for each one of those, right? So you can do any project you want in there as long as your voters don't approve above what is allocated in the bill.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, you're correct that under the bill that was passed last year, the legislature set caps on specific districts. And when, I'm going to say if, this bill passes this year, there are no caps. So the program's wide open to any projects that any municipality wants to undertake that they can secure voter approval. We will simply determine whether it's eligible for 70% reimbursement if it meets our space guidelines, or 60% if it exceeds them.
Thank you very much. Objection is maintained. Mindy, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Stegman?
No.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Wilkin?
No.
Senator Green?
No.
Two yea, five nay.
And so the amendment fails. Are there other questions about this? Eddie, did you have other testimony that you wanted to give about this bill? I see your name is on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. Madam Chair, that we've worked very hard with the members on the House side as well as members over here to bring this bill before this committee today. The fiscal notes that we prepared for this bill, I broke them down into, there's four parts here. And the first one has to do with the debt reimbursement program. And you'll see we put asterisks in there because we don't know what the individual municipalities will actually come to the department for. The second fiscal note has to do with the Military Youth Academy, and that's because their funding is tied directly to the base student allocation. And this particular piece of legislation would increase the base student allocation to $5,380. The next fiscal note that I have is the increase in the base student allocation, which is $96 million. Based on the $5,380 base student allocation. And I did this one separate from the other fiscal note, although they both go to the foundation program. And the reason for that was I wanted to make sure that we had separation between the funding that is ongoing funding, which would be the $96 million, and the one-time funding, which is the $35 million. But both of these fiscal notes would require the money to be deposited in the public school fund for distribution next year. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. And I know that the amendment has the performance incentive program in it now, and the commissioner is here if you'd like to ask him questions about that program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there other questions for Eddie James? Senator Stedman.
Just a quick comment, Madam Chairman, from if somebody happens to have the numbers on how much we've increased base student allocation for over the last 4 years, including this year's adjustment, and we can maybe get that, well, bring it to the table. It's a substantial one. It should be pushing 40%.
I think the school maestro has just gone to get the information for us, okay? Other information from Senator Wilkin.
While we're talking about school construction, we should remember that last year we undertook an ambitious, in fact, historic effort to completely do the major maintenance list, and we're in the 07 budget is the other half of that, which I remember, right, Eddie, was $45 million is embedded in the capital budget. The good news is last year we wiped that out. Bad news is it's back at $200 million today. So that's what happens when you fund it. Anyway, I just wanted to remind us that we've That was a significant effort last year, and I'm proud to say, and we all should be proud to say, that we've accomplished that.
Anything else?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Commissioner, did you want to join us, or you just want to let us continue? Okay, thank you. We have a couple other people, and we are on a huge time constraint. Carl Rose. Andy said briefly. It's always good to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, Carl Rose. I'm Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I will be very brief on behalf of the association. We want to thank both bodies for all the work that you've put in. We've come to you with a host of needs, and the last time we were here, we talked about foundation funding. We were concerned about the cost differential. We were very concerned about TERS and PERS. We were concerned about mentoring programs, performance incentives, as well as capital improvements and extending the bond reimbursement. Little did we know that most of those things would be encompassed in one bill. But I do want to say on behalf of my association, we are very thankful for the work that's been done. And I would share with you, I've been reading some of the reports from across the state, and some school systems are closing schools down as a result of unfunded liabilities that their state legislatures are not helping them with. And that is not the case in Alaska. And I'd like to thank you for your support. In closing, I would say that the association has a declaration that points to our children as Alaska's top priority, their health, their safety, their education, and their future. And I think much of what you folks have been doing here for the last few years has been addressing those issues. And for that, I want to thank you very much and tell you, Madam Chairman, you are particularly dashing this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie.
Eddie Haskell?
That's Haskell, that is. Okay. Peggy Cowan? Okay. Stephanie Allison?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Stephanie Allison. I'm the parent of a child in the Juneau School District. I'm also...
Just one moment, please. Representative Cotto.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We have some business on the House floor, which started at 6 o'clock.
Oh, go right
so
ahead.
I would like to be able to leave and just have my aide take over. Thank
fine.
You very much.
Thank you very much. Continue, Stephanie.
Thank
Sorry.
You. I have a child in the Juneau School District. I'm also a member of the Network Alaska Kids Count. On Wednesday, I spent the majority of the day hanging out with you guys and listening to the considerable debate on House Bill 13. On Wednesday evening, I got to attend a site council meeting at my son's school, and in part what had happened during the day, to great joy of my fellow site council members, that there was a possibility that we would not lose one teacher and we would not lose our full-time counselor. And that, although it's a substantial amount of money, that's what worked down into our school of 350 students. We get to keep one teacher and we get to keep a half-time counselor. It's not much, but in the big picture, it's a great deal. And we are very thankful for the opportunity that this might happen. As you know, the Juneau Assembly funds to the cap every year. And we, as a district, do everything we can to keep the costs down as much as possible and to make sure the needs and the wishes of the parents are being addressed. For the last 2 years, I've been a member of the Budget Advisory Committee for the school district, and I can tell you that the school board takes into account our recommendations and has for the last 2 years followed those recommendations completely. So they are very responsive to the students and the teachers. I'm very grateful that there's a possibility that this is going to happen and that this school can remain at least as whole as it has been for the last year. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Stephanie. Are there any other questions? Is there any other information needed on House Bill 13? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Comment on Senator Wilkins' chart. Student numbers have gone down. Money has increased dramatically. Yet I'm sure we will hear next year that the plea for adequate funding However, I have a poll from an informal poll of my district, and the vast majority of people in my district feel that education funding before this largesse was either adequate or too much. So perhaps we ought to hear from the people we don't hear from as often.
Yes, that's for sure. There are diverse opinions on the funding. Senator Wilken, can I get a motion, please?
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 13 from committee as. Did we amend that? Did we amend it?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
No, we didn't.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 13 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
CS for House Bill 13.
Thank you. CS for version T, dated 5506, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Being no objection, House Bill 13 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Jill?
Is that Carl?
No, it was not. Okay. House Bill 334. Brief it is. Barbara? What's that? Oh, okay. The CS and the amendment is being distributed as we speak here. Thank you.
Which bill?
We're on 334.
Let's take it down to CS.
$356 money at 20 mil ad valorem tax money.
Well, I was behaving myself because I was going to ask, which is the richest local government in the United States?
We'll be on the record. We're off the record.
So they need.
The record, and we have version Y before us. I will move version Y and object for explanation. Senator Bundy, you want to tell us what this does?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did want to thank the committee for including in this bill another bill that I've been involved in that would discuss the challenge that sometimes people say, and when you live in an area that have property tax, you never own your home because it could be taken from you by the government for non-payment of taxes. Should what you've added to House Bill 334 now is simply an option for local governments to allow someone who has fallen on catastrophic hard times to defer their property tax so that if they are in a financial or medical emergency, they don't have to worry about losing the roof over their head in addition to all our other problems. And that deferral would remain until such time that the property was sold, the person financial situation increased or improved, or they passed away, and it's basically a lien against the property that then becomes due and payable to the municipality. It seems like a win-win to me, and I'd just like to point out again, it is an option for local governments.
And that's contained in Section 2 on page 2 and 3, I believe, just so the members can check it. And Representative Ramirez, Jim Pound, welcome. If you'd like to go ahead and explain the bill.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm happy to be here. House Bill 334 originated as a development bill. Most of you are familiar with the McKay building in downtown Anchorage, which has crept toward completion for many, many, many years. We have a building that would benefit from a similar rehabilitation, regentrification in downtown Fairbanks. It was constructed, I think, Senator Wilkin, before statehood, I think. Certainly since I was a boy, it used to house the Tiki Cove restaurant, best Chinese restaurant in Fairbanks, and we used to dine there in the penthouse. It was the old Petroleum Club in Fairbanks in the 70s, and it's fallen on hard times over the last decade. It's now got plywood over many of the windows. Plumbing has been blown out. It's too expensive for the city to demolish and haul off to the landfill, and we've not yet been successful in attracting a developer. We have we now have that opportunity. House Bill 334 in itself is a pretty simple works to define a pretty simple end, a simple measure, and that is that if an existing municipal government, a city council or a borough assembly, allows for a set of tax exemptions for a defunct structure which would benefit from slow and steady development and rehabilitation, if a deal is cut with that city council and over that period of time there's a turnover, let's say, in the Fairbanks City Council of its members, the members that are later elected, if there was an arrangement between the existing city council and the developer to defer property taxes to a specific period of time, that agreement would be maintained over that period of time. Since then, we've heard folks in the hospitality industry that this would also be applicable to tourism-related properties that may enjoy a similar rehabilitation, and it's simple in its structure. We are grateful for Senator Bundy's addition in this CS, and appreciate the amendment that will be offered by Senator Green. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair, but there is a call in the House, so with your permission, I'd like to go.
Please go.
Thank you.
We don't want anyone.
Please leave.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes it goes better. Thank you very much. Are there any questions about this legislation? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, just for the record, want it to be known that there were some concerns about chain of ownership, and I expressed those concerns to the bill sponsor and Mr. Pound, and they clarified it with me, and we are A-okay. So thank you
for doing
that.
Chair, thank you.
Very good. Well, no, I think we've done something similar to this in the past, and it is permissive language. It does not require it, and the governments need only do what they choose to do. And you have in your packet amendment number one, and I will move amendment number one.
Madam Chair, before we go on to that, ask the sponsor just to make sure that the substantive changes that were done under Senator Bundy's amendment?
Through the chair, for the record, first, I'm Jim Pound, staff representative of Ramirez. Senator Olson, as I interpret or read the changes that it has no effect on the existing or the prior language of 334. It adds language that allows a municipality to defer property taxes for a resident who owns. It must be a resident and the definition is permanent fund.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, I get the gist of it now, and you're in favor of this.
Thank you. Oh, and I do need to remove my objection to adopting the CS. Is there further objection to adopting the CS? Okay, we now have version Y before us, and I will move amendment number one. On amendment number one, I will object for explanation, and it has to do with the residence of an educator in a private religious or parochial school. Minister means an individual who is, and it gives the further explanation there. This is to further clarify our statute and make it clear exactly what is contained in that statute. It's clarifying language. I will remove my objection. Are there any questions, or is there further objection? Senator Wilkin.
Do we have any idea what this means to our town?
The Chair, Senator Wilkin, I don't believe it has any effect in the Fairbanks area at all. I think this is primarily within the municipality of Anchorage.
Okay.
Okay. Is there further questions about amendment number? Are there any questions about amendment number one?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just worried about the breadth of this, and mm-hmm. I read in the paper about it, but I kind of expected perhaps if we had some sense of what this means. Licensed as a minister employed by a religious organization to carry out a ministry. I don't know what that means. There are people, I think, that drive trucks and also are employed to carry out a ministry, I believe. So is there a way to game this? I don't know. I guess I wish someone from perhaps the our state assessor or somebody could help me with this. I understand, I think, what they want to do, but I just wonder at the breadth of this, what appears to be an innocuous change. I'm not sure we're not opening the door up for all sorts of gaming in the name of being licensed as a minister.
Well, if you go to the original language, the residence of a bishop, pastor, priest, mm-hmm. rabbi, minister, or religious order of a recognized religious organization, a structure, its furniture, et cetera, and that's how it's been interpreted in the past. And there have been inclusion of various properties for many years, under the assumption that that's what was going on. It went on like that for many, many, many years, and they suddenly came back in and said, no, we're going to change our interpretation of it. And it's primarily in Anchorage. And this is just to clarify that a minister means an individual who's ordained, commissioned, or licensed as a minister according to standards of the religious organization for its ministers. And employed by the religious organization. It's not or, it's and.
If I could, in the other body, there's one of the, I know at least one who for a check, for payroll, teaches in a religious school. But that isn't his vocation, it's his avocation. So would his property then be eligible for a tax exemption, even though that's not his job?
No, it has to be the property of
religious organization.
Of the religious organization.
Owned by a religious organization. Mm-hmm. So if the religious organization owned a house that he lived in, that would be the qualifier?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Senator Stedman.
Well, I was just going to clarify that same point, that these are not for private residences. The homes have to be owned by the religious organizations.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions? Senator Hoffman.
And where is that qualifier at in here, owned by the religious organization?
Second line, first sentence on B. Is that not a good mention?
Under B. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's in under B. Okay. At the very top.
Okay.
Is there any objection, any further objection to amendment number one? I withdraw my objection. Amendment number one is adopted. Are there any further questions about House Bill 334? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 334 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
334 moves from as amended, moves from committee with individual recommendation and attached zero fiscal notes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Okay.
So we're going to, before we go to, do you have the amendments ready, Reneva? Okay, let us take up, excuse me, just a minute. Allison, Representative Jewell is back on the floor under a call, correct? I think he'd probably rather us pass this out than wait till tomorrow. So we will go ahead, even if he's not here, okay? We've had the discussion on this, and we've had some concerns expressed and some conversations going on, and I think we're now at a point where we can go ahead and pass this out. Senator Hoffman, or Senator Olson, can I get you to move House Concurrent Resolution Number 30 as amended out of committee?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that we move House Concurrent Resolution Number 30 as amended.
Is there objection? Senator Wilkin.
Object just for a moment. I had great concerns over this, but I've talked with the bill sponsor, and I now understand the scope of this isn't just quite what I thought it was going to be. So I'm supportive of it, and I appreciate his patience and information. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
I applaud that support.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and so it moves out of committee with individual recommendations. So thank you very much. Okay, we are back on 426. Well, you all came out of the room, heads held high, lots of paper. Okay, so we have before us House Bill 426, and there are two amendments that the work group has gone to a great deal of trouble, I'm sure, to clarify. So I'll move amendment number four and object for explanation. Reneva or Stacy?
Madam Chair, on page four, line 27. We just did some wordsmithing here.
Now we're on amendment four.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Page four, line nine?
That's amendment number. Maybe you have a number different than I do. Okay. Page four, line nine. After the words medical assistant recipient, we're adding a sentence that clarifies that an application is not a lawsuit. When I talked to Jean Michelle this afternoon from Ledge Legal, she said that we should put on record that the term application does not mean a lawsuit, but we have actually put language in here to clarify that so that there is no doubt.
Okay. That's page four, line nine. I have the wrong version. Excuse me. I've done that.
Charlie.
Madam Chair, that's an amendment to the Hess version.
Thank you. And I'll just add, a medical assistance recipient is under no duty to file a civil or other action in order to reimburse the state for the cost of care or services.
And Madam Chair, Stacy may want to clarify that elsewhere in this legislation, the state does have the ability to file a lawsuit on behalf of the medical assistance recipient.
Mm-hmm.
So this basically says that the recipient isn't required to file a lawsuit, but if the state feels they can recover money, then they can file a lawsuit in that case.
Okay. And they'll clear up the typos.
Yes.
Other in order. So I'll remove my objection. Is there a continued objection to amendment number four? Amendment number four is adopted. I'll move amendment number five and object for clarification.
Madam Chair, this just is a little wordsmithing. Doesn't tie it down to 30 days before a judgment, but a notice within 30 days of a judgment. That allows for some of the concerns that Stacy also shared. If they needed to do a quick decision or judgment, then they could. And Madam Chair, I just realized that I have missed another. No, that does it. I'm sorry.
Okay, so we're just changing that 30 days notice before to
notice within 30 days.
Of, and we, on page 28, or on line 28, we're deleting may be satisfied, so it's an award or settlement in an action or a claim.
Okay, or settlement in an action or a claim. Okay.
And Madam Chair, just for the record, we did discuss quite a bit section 9, which takes away the state's ability to waive a subrogation. And do you want to say anything about that?
Through the chair, Stacey Crayley with the Department of Law. You know, I listened to Ms. McCready's concerns about Section 9, and it is my understanding that there is no federal requirement that there be a waiver, undue hardship waiver, for a subrogation matter. There is undue hardship requirements for other recoveries under Medicaid, such as a state recovery. So removing that from the statutory language is, in light of her concerns, I don't agree with her position that there is a federal requirement that there be a waiver. And so, you know, we've agreed to somewhat disagree on that. I will note for the record that should she be correct, and Medicaid can be a little complicated, that a federal requirement, we're required to abide by the federal rules in order to maintain our reimbursement and our recovery. So as we go back and look at this, and if that does in fact take place or it does occur and there is a federal requirement for a waiver, we would have to provide that through a regulatory process. So not having it in statute doesn't mean it's not available, because we're obligated to comply with federal law in implementing our Medicaid programs.
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to add, I think I discussed this in HES committee, but Alaska will now become the first state that has passed legislation to comply with these new federal laws. Other states, because there is a delayed effective date on the federal law, because other states have been grappling with trying to do this, but unsuccessfully, so we're gonna be the first state to deal with it.
Yeah, you know, this is something that many of us have spent a lot of time talking about. How does it get more efficient? How do we make sure that things are happening correctly and all? And I appreciate what you've done, and I know that's not easy to do. And I know Senator Dyson and the others join me in that. Thanks for that as well. Are there any other questions about this legislation? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard testimony on page 5, line 31, that the word full should be stricken. And what is the comments? Page 5, line 31.
Madam Chair, we did discuss that, and I forgot to put together an amendment for that. We agree that fulls should be removed.
There is amendment, or?
What page is it?
Page 5, line 31.
Page 5, line 31. Okay, the word
full.
That's amendment 2.
That's amendment.
No. Oh, no, you're right.
Yes, that is in amendment 2, page 3, line 3 and 4.
My mistake. I'm.
Are you saying it was handled in the other amendment?
Through the chair, I'm mistaken. We did talk about it, that there was an issue when Ms. McCready was testifying that we had, in other provisions of the bill, had removed full payment or full repayment, and I indicated through a nod in the back here that I agreed with her that that was an omission that we hadn't caught. So there needs to be that fix on page 5, line 31. Full repayment should be deleted, and it should be make payment to the, it should be, instead of making full repayment, it should be make payment to the department for costs.
Okay, so all we're going to do is remove the word full from line 31 on page 5.
Yes.
It would continue with maintaining public assistance or medical assistant eligibility without first making repayment to the department. Correct. Okay. I will move conceptual amendment number 6, that on page 5, line 31, we remove the word full. Okay. Is there objection? Amendment number 6 is adopted.
Ready?
Please.
Madam Chair.
Are we done?
Okay. Madam Chair, would go without, that we shouldn't let it go without mentioning, we appreciate Representative Coghill and Pickard Reneva's work on this. And Madam Chair, after hearing this bill in two different committees, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we celebrate the passage of House Bill 426 from the Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached red fiscal notes.
Very good, very good. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, committee.
For the members of the committee, next meeting is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., not 10:30, not 10 as posted, but at 9 a.m. And we will probably be hearing the bells within about 5 or 6 minutes. So we are, I think we can adjourn. We are adjourned.